Good evening again. I greet you in the name of Christ. Anybody prepared to recite some of the verses? Anybody at all? I don't care what age. If you're a young person, you don't need to be shy. Anybody? Very good. No further? Okay. That's fine. Anyone else? If not, let's read it together again this evening. Colossians chapter 2, verse 6. As ye have therefore received Christ Jesus the Lord, so walk ye in him, rooted and built up in him, and established in the faith, as ye have been taught, abounding therein with thanksgiving. Beware lest any man spoil you through philosophy and vain deceit, after the tradition of men, after the rudiments of the world, and not after Christ. For in him dwelleth all the fullness of the Godhead bodily, and ye are complete in him, which is the head of all principality and power, in whom also ye are circumcised with the circumcision made without hands, in putting off the body of the sins of the flesh by the circumcision of Christ, buried with him in baptism, wherein also ye are risen with him through the faith of the operation of God, who hath raised him from the dead. And you, being dead in your sins and the uncircumcision of your flesh, hath he quickened together with him, having forgiven you all trespasses, blotting out the handwriting of ordinances that was against us, which was contrary to us, and took it out of the way, nailing it to his cross. And having spoiled principalities and powers, he made a show of them openly, triumphing over them in it. Okay, I will ask for volunteers again tomorrow night. For a message this evening, I felt led to do something that I don't think I have ever done before in my years of preaching, and that is to do a little character analysis of somebody in the Bible. I don't think I've ever done this before, so I shouldn't call you guinea pigs, but you're the test subjects, I guess. Jude 11 says, "Woe unto them, for they have gone in the way of Cain and ran greedily after the error of Balaam for reward and perished in the gainsaying of Kore." Now, Jude is writing about people that we learn in verse 8 are filthy dreamers. They defile the flesh. They despise dominion. They speak evil of dignities. And he talks about how Michael the archangel was not bringing railing accusations against the devil. But there's men out there who will do these things, and he compares them to three Old Testament characters, Cain, Balaam, and Korah, is how we would know him in the Old Testament. We're going to talk about Cain tonight. And the title, the reason I went to Jude verse 11 is just because I got the title from there, The Way of Cain. You know, Cain, there's not that many verses about Cain in the Bible. But I suspect if you were to do an informal poll on the streets of Strasbourg, you would probably find a fairly high percentage of people out there at least know the name and know something about Cain. I think I'm right on that. It's interesting to me that there's things in the Bible that no matter where you go or who you're talking to, they have at least a sense of certain things. Cain is one of them. Cain's story is found in Genesis chapter 4, and it really only takes about 25 verses, actually less than that, to just tell a story. And one of the things that's fascinating to me about the Bible is we are so familiar with it that we almost don't get the humanity of the people. And we fail to give them emotions. And I do not want to speculate tonight on a lot of things that we don't know. And yet, knowing ourselves and knowing human experience, we can kind of look at this story and learn some things perhaps from it, from what we know happened, just the bare-bone facts that are here. Cain is mentioned here, and I'll read two other verses where he is mentioned in the Bible. In Hebrews chapter 11, verse 4, we read, "By faith Abel offered unto God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, by which he obtained witness that he was righteous, God testifying of his gifts, and by it he being dead yet speaketh." So there we don't really learn anything about Cain, except we learned that Abel's sacrifice was more excellent than Cain's. And that actually comes out in Genesis. We have some hints about that. And then in 1 John chapter 3, verse 12, we will read, "Not as Cain, who was of that wicked one, and slew his brother. And wherefore slew he him?" Or why did he kill him? "Because his own works were evil, and his brother's righteous." Now, I just wanted to read those verses because I don't know that we'll turn to them later on. We're going to stay pretty much here in the Genesis narrative. So let's read Genesis chapter 4, starting at verse 1, and read about Cain. "And Adam knew Eve his wife, and she conceived and bare Cain, and said, I have gotten a man from the Lord. And she again bare his brother Abel. And Abel was a keeper of sheep, but Cain was a tiller of the ground. And in process of time it came to pass that Cain brought of the fruit of the ground an offering unto the Lord. And Abel, he also brought of the firstlings of his flock, and of the fat thereof. And the Lord had respect unto Abel and to his offering, but unto Cain and to his offering he had not respect. And Cain was very wroth, and his countenance fell. And the Lord said unto Cain, Why art thou wroth, and why is thy countenance fallen? If thou doest well, shalt thou not be accepted? And if thou doest not well, sin lieth at the door, and unto thee shall be his desire, and thou shalt rule over him. And Cain talked with Abel his brother. And it came to pass, when they were in the field, that Cain rose up against Abel his brother, and slew him. And the Lord said unto Cain, Where is Abel thy brother? And he said, I know not. Am I my brother's keeper? And he said, What hast thou done? The voice of thy brother's blood crieth unto me from the ground. And now art thou cursed from the earth, which hath opened her mouth to receive thy brother's blood from thy hand. When thou tillest the ground, it shall not henceforth yield unto thee her strength. A fugitive and a vagabond shalt thou be in the earth. And Cain said unto the Lord, My punishment is greater than I can bear. Behold, thou hast driven me out this day from the face of the earth, and from thy face shall I be hid, and I shall be a fugitive and a vagabond in the earth. And it shall come to pass that everyone that findeth me shall slay me. And the Lord said unto him, Therefore, whosoever slayeth Cain, vengeance shall be taken on him sevenfold. And the Lord set a mark upon Cain, lest any finding him should kill him. And Cain went out from the presence of the Lord, and dwelt in the land of Nod, on the east of Eden. And Cain knew his wife, and she conceived and bare Enoch, and he builded a city, and called the name of the city after his son Enoch." I'm going to read to the end of the chapter. There's not much more about Cain, but there is just a little bit, so we'll just keep going. And unto Enoch was born Irad, and Irad begat Mahujiel, and Mahujiel begat Methusiel, and Methusiel begat Lamech. And Lamech took unto him two wives, the name of the one was Ada, and the other one, and the name of the other Zillah. And Ada bare Jabal, he was the father of such that dwell in, of such as dwell in tents, and of such as have cattle. And his brother's name was Jubal, he was the father of all such as handle the harp and organ. And Zillah, she also bare Tubal-Cain, an instructor of every artificer in brass and iron, and the sister of Tubal-Cain was Naamah. And Lamech said unto his wives, Ada and Zillah, hear my voice, ye wives of Lamech, hearken unto my speech, for I have slain a man to my wounding, and a young man to my hurt. If Cain shall be avenged sevenfold, truly Lamech 70 and sevenfold. And Adam knew his wife again, and she bare a son, and called his name Seth. For God, said she, hath appointed me another seed instead of Abel, whom Cain slew. And to Seth, to him also there was born a son, and he called his name Enos. Then began men to call upon the name of the Lord. So again, we do not have just a terrible amount of detail about Cain, and yet we have a lot about Cain packed into 25 verses, or however many it is, 26. The Bible teaches us that these people are given to us for examples. And I realize that one of the hazards of doing character studies is the most important character in the Bible, of course, is Jesus Christ. And we don't want to take anything away from him. And really, tonight, we are using a man who serves best as a bad example, someone that we don't want to be. And so his story is here for a reason. I thought what we would do is take a moment to analyze what we know for sure about Cain. Maybe you all would like to help me. In this chapter, what are some things that we learn that the Bible tells us specifically that we can say we know about Cain? Just start picking them out.
First human to ever be born.
Okay, he was the first human born, right? That's the first one I had down. What else?
He had a brother, Abel.
These are very common known facts, and maybe you feel a little foolish telling these things, but let's just look at it. What do we know? We know he was the first human born. We know that he had a brother, Abel. What else do we know about Cain from this passage? Okay, he got angry. And it is the first man recorded to get angry. That's right.
He was a farmer.
Thank you. I did have that one too. I didn't have the anger one. Some other ones.
Offered a sacrifice to God.
Okay, we know that he offered a sacrifice to God. That's right. What are some other facts?
First person
to kill anyone. That's an interesting thought. He did kill Abel, and maybe he did not know that that would be the outcome. Nobody had ever been killed before that we know of. There's a lot of unknowns here, but going by here, it's true. Anything else that we know about him? These are all good.
He was defensive.
Thank you. I wanted you to clarify that. Yes, he was defensive when God told him some things or asked him a question. Well, I don't know. Am I my brother's keeper? Why are you asking me that? I'm putting some words in there, of course. Anything else? Okay, he somehow knew that God did not accept his offering. That's right.
He had a wife.
Somewhere along the way. That's right. We know that. These are some fascinating things that would be a lot of fun to spend some time imagining, right?
The Lord gave some kind of mark.
Yes, he was marked in some way. We don't really know what that was, but we know that he was.
Cursed.
Okay.
You read it in 1 John, but his deeds were evil.
Okay, good. Y'all are getting a lot of stuff I didn't have. Keep going. I like this.
It seems like the murder was premeditated, possibly.
I agree with that. It seems as if there was something happening in Cain talking to his brother to get him to the field. It does seem like there was something happening there. I'm sorry? Oh, right. Mm-hmm. Anything else? He did not want to die. That's right.
Seems like he wasn't too happy or in agreement with the judgment God put upon him.
Right. He resisted that, or at least complained about it anyway.
So he went out of the presence of the Lord, didn't he? He turned his back on God.
Right. He went and lived somewhere away from God. I don't know how that all works because we know that God's everywhere, but it says specifically that he went from the presence of the Lord. A couple things I have yet that you haven't guessed, but you've got some that I didn't put down, so I guess we're even, right?
He started a city.
Yes, that was one that I wrote down. He built a city and named it after his son. One that I just picked up on that I do not know what to really make of it, but I found his mother's announcement when he was born intriguing. I have gotten a man from the Lord. We know that his mother had some expectations for him. Now, I may be jumping out of facts and going into some speculation here, but is it reasonable to think that maybe Eve thought this was the fulfillment of the promise of Genesis chapter 3, verse 15, where we would go and say this was the first hint of a Messiah that's going to come from the seed of a woman? Is it possible that it ties to that? I wouldn't split a church over it, but it seems like there might be something there. She's like, you know what? This is what God promised. Think how disappointing it would have been for her as she watched this boy grow up and become the man that he became. Now, in my studies, I came across this Jewish tradition, and I don't know what to do with it, but it's interesting to speculate on. I'm going into speculation. I'm going to make that very clear. But there's speculation in Jewish tradition that Cain and Abel were twins. How many of you have heard that? I figured some of you have at least heard it anyway. And they base it on something that seems somewhat, whatever. It's not far out. But you notice in verse 1 it says Adam knew his wife Eve, and you don't see that phrase again until verse 25. Now, again, this is pure speculation, but it is interesting to contemplate what if they were. Here you now have two boys growing up together, and they were always together. Twins have a lot in common, and they you know, there's a lot that goes on between twins. And that almost makes it worse in a way that it ended up the way it did. In a way, okay, obviously we don't want to kill our brothers no matter what, but I think that about covers all the facts that I picked up on. Yes. The legend of Cain apparently went down several generations. I did not do the calculation on what relation Lamech is to Cain. Can someone do that real quick for me? Somebody that's better at genealogy. Enoch was a son. Irad was a grandson. Mahujiel was a great-grandson. Methusiel was a great-great-grandson. Lamech was a great-great-great-grandson. Do I have that right? Close enough. All right. I like these thoughts because, again, it's helping us to put some flesh to a skeleton. Imagine some of these things. Just think about the family relationships going on here. We have brothers. We have father and mother. We don't know where the wife came from. I know it's only logical to assume that it was his sister. But we don't have any specific mention of any daughters being born at this point. The other thing that I find fascinating as I just read this story, who was Cain afraid of? Because we really do only have record of four people at this point. So who was he afraid was going to kill him? And I don't know if it's even worth debating all of that, but the other thing that fascinates me is, why did he build a city? I mean, when we think of cities, we think of a place for a lot of people to live. So I'm getting a sense that there must have been a larger population here than what a cursory reading would indicate. And again, I wouldn't build big doctrines on it. We're just looking at it for a human interest, if you will. So what are some traits? We've kind of touched on a few. I'd like to spend a little bit of time looking at traits that characterize Cain. The first thing that we notice about Cain is that he was self-willed. Now, we don't really find that attitude until we get to about verse 5. And again, I don't know how Cain knew that God did not respect his offering and that he did respect Abel's. Apparently God had communicated something to Adam and Eve that Adam and Eve had communicated to the children, or God had a way of talking to these people that we don't find so much later on. But somehow he knew. And 1 John 3 tells us that his works were evil, and that is why he killed Abel, because his works were evil and Abel's were good. But the character trait that we want to get here is that he was a self-willed person. He was going to do what Cain was going to do. And his mind, it seems like his thought process must have been, well, God has to accept my offering. And there's a lot of speculation about whether his offering was just not good enough. Maybe he didn't bring the first fruits. Maybe it was because God wanted blood. And I'm not prepared to debate those points. I'm not sure that it really matters, other than we know that Cain thought that his offering was good enough. And when he discovered that it somehow wasn't good enough, he got angry about it. The word used is wrath. He was very wroth. And the Bible, if you look up words in the Hebrew and you try to figure out what it actually means, because we don't use that word very much, probably the synonym that I would put in there is he was infuriated. He was very angry. This isn't just a little bit ticked off. He was mad. And it was brooding. It wasn't something that he just left go, because in the end of verse 5 we find out that his countenance changed. It says that it fell. And we know what this is like. We've been around people long enough to know that when a person's countenance is no longer what it used to be, and you ask the person, well, what's wrong? Well, how do you even know something's wrong? Well, it's because their face is different. And that's what it seems like God did. He says to Cain, what's the matter? Why are you angry? That takes me to the second thing. He became an angry person. There's a difference between someone who gets angry and someone who is angry. It seems to me that Cain became angry, down to the very marrow of his bones. He was just mad. And he was mad because he didn't want to comply with what God. He was self-willed. And so when a person who is self-willed finds that the only way to happiness, I guess, or to please whoever is over him as authority, is that he's going to have to lay down something that he wants to do. There's only two choices. You can either rebel and get angry about it, or you can submit. And he chose not to. He got angry, and he spent a lot of time in anger. It seems to me that he did. I can't prove that, but he did seem, that seems to indicate that this anger became a very deep-seated anger that he could hardly overcome. This leads to the next problem of Cain. And I see these things as kind of a progression. But he became unwilling to listen to the voice of reason. You know, the expression mad for people that are angry is actually not that far off. There's a reason that word kind of sticks. Because people who are angry beyond the point of reason, they may as well be insane. They may as well be mad, if you will. And so we have this conversation between God and Cain, and he says, why are you angry? If you do well, won't you be accepted? If you don't do well, look out. Sin is right there. You will fall, Cain. Be careful, because you're about to do something that you don't really know what you're doing. And that is so true for us, isn't it? As human beings, we have all been subject to the passion of anger, I think, to the point that we have done things that we have regretted. Maybe it's simply just a word that we said to somebody that we cared about. Maybe we've actually gone so far as to throw objects or possibly even hit someone. I don't think I'm talking to anybody who has murdered someone. Unless you served your jail sentence and now you're out. But murder is something that is still taken fairly seriously in the world, and it should be. But he became unwilling to listen to reason. Just, what did he do? He went out from that conversation with God. However God spoke to them, I don't know. Don't understand that, but it was very clear that Cain understood that he needed to do something different with his offering, and he was unwilling to do it, so he got angry, and God said, why are you angry? And it doesn't even give a response. He goes out, and the next thing we learn from the Bible story is that Cain is talking to Abel. And whatever happened there, I agree with the brother that mentioned that it seemed like it was premeditated. It seems, and we can't prove that, but it seems like he brought him to a place where they could not be observed out in the field. And again, that seems to indicate that there must have been a somewhat decent-sized population there, at least. And again, we would believe that it had to all be Adam and Eve's children. But obviously, the Bible tells us only what God wanted us to know, so we can't know those things for sure. But it seemed like he lured him into a place that would be unobserved. Instead of being willing to listen to God, he said, I'm going to get rid of Abel. And maybe he didn't know. That thought was suggested as well. And it's possible that he didn't know. Nobody had ever died before. How was he supposed to know what would happen if he hit Abel or stabbed him or whatever he did? We don't know what he did. We don't know what method he used to kill his brother. But he did. He ended up, because he was self-willed, because he refused to listen to reason, and he let that anger build and build, he went out and committed an unthinkable act. He did something that I doubt when he was a little boy he would have ever thought he would do. And we don't know how old he was either at this point. The way of Cain takes us another step farther, and that is when the ultimate authority of the universe asks a question, he defies him. It's pretty hard to defy authorities, isn't it? unless we've put ourselves into a position that we have a lot of things to lose at that point. And he became defiant toward God, who is the ultimate authority. And he asked the question. Well, actually, he doesn't ask. God asked the question, and he just simply lies. He said, I don't know. I don't know where my brother is. And I guess if you want to be play devil's advocate here a little bit, there's a sense in which he may have been right. He may have been saying, well, I don't know where Abel went. Just, you can forget that as soon as you hear it. But then he asked this question back to God. Am I supposed to know? Am I supposed to watch my brother all the time? And God doesn't talk about that. He just says, your brother's blood is crying to me from the ground. And then he proceeds to give Cain his punishment. And that takes me to the next thing in the way of Cain. After he becomes defiant, notice that his sorrow had nothing to do with his deed. It had everything to do with the consequences of the deed. And this is really, really sad. When you're dealing with people who, if it's your child or if it's anybody that you are responsible for, when you see this happening, your heart falls, because you know at that point that, what are you going to do? Now, for us as men, we like to think, well, maybe God can get a hold of that person somehow. But here we're actually talking about God. Is it possible that when a person gets to the point where they refuse to listen to any earthly authority, that in a sense they're already doing it to God? It's sobering enough that I wouldn't just throw it out. But if we live in this kind of rebellion against earthly authorities, when we're faced with God in the ultimate sense, would it matter? Can a person change at that point? I'm not sure. But his sorrow was all about the consequences. And this is fairly common. Paul talks about it, the whole difference between godly sorrow and the other kind that just says, I'm sorry, I'm caught. And he just moans about it. My punishment is greater than I can bear. I'm going to be driven away from all these people. I'm going to be a fugitive and a vagabond, whatever that means. It means, I guess, that he didn't have a place to live. And then it seems to me that by building the city, Cain goes one step farther in his path, and he tries to undo the consequences. You see, a city has the idea of a dwelling place, a place to go, a place to lock the gates and be safe. When you hear a fugitive and a vagabond, you don't think of cities. You think of someone wandering around with no place to go. That's what I think of. It seems to me that when Cain built the city, that it was his way of saying, I'm going to be okay without God anyway. I can't prove that, but it seems like a logical end to a person like Cain, where he decides he's going to just do it his way. The other step in the way of Cain that Cain could not control, and he may not even have known. I don't know when Cain died. They lived a long time, and so he very likely could have lived long enough to see Lamech. But Cain had no control over the influence that his actions and words and punishment and all of that was going to go. What did we decide? 4 generations? And here's Lamech coming along, and he's like, you know what? I killed somebody, but if Cain's going to be avenged, then I'm going to be avenged. And we get this really hardened murderer, and he points back to Cain. And you know, if we decide that we're going to take the way of Cain, we have no control over what that's going to do to people years and years later. So, I've been kind of weaving some of the practical points into this way as we looked at it, but I'd like to just conclude tonight with looking at some things that we can specifically take from the story of Cain, apply it to our lives, and whatever God tells you to do with it, you should do. So what we can learn from Cain, the first thing that we can learn from Cain, one of the first things, is that God has given us what we need to know. And when we begin to go against what God has given us to know, we are setting ourselves up for big, big problems. Somehow, Cain knew what was expected of the offerings. Somehow he did. I do not know how, but he knew it. And he chose to keep on doing his thing anyway. We already talked about that. I don't want to spend too much time on it. But when we decide to do something against what God has told us to do, saying that we're setting ourselves up for a big problem is an understatement. We're setting ourselves up for major problems, not only in this life, but in eternal existence, because He is the ultimate authority. We learn from Cain, I don't know if we learned it from Cain or from Adam and Eve, but we learn a lesson in this story, that the consequences of sin progress rapidly. We are only in one generation from eating a fruit that was forbidden to a murderer. So maybe the lesson is actually from Adam and Eve, but the whole story lends itself to this. We don't know the outcome of a sinful action. We just don't know. I seriously believe that if Eve could have known this when she decided to listen to the devil, that maybe she wouldn't have eaten of the fruit. She might have anyway. Humans are pretty stubborn. But I imagine that as Cain grew up, and especially when she got to verse 25, where she had another son after Abel had been killed, that she knew what sorrow was. Eve certainly knew. Another thing we learn from Cain, the question, am I my brother's keeper? The answer is actually yes. And I think Cain knew that. But he asked it in his conversation with God. And that, I know there have been messages preached just on that phrase, and I don't want to spend too much time on it. But even at a very, very basic level, we talked earlier this week about the sanctity of life, and at a very basic level, we are at least responsible to try to protect each other's physical lives, if nothing else. Now, I believe that being a brother's keeper goes far deeper than that. But At the very basic level, God does expect us to at least look out for each other's life if we can. I really believe that. And so when we ask this question, the lesson we learn is, yes, we are actually responsible in some way for the people around us. And Jesus answered the question, who's my neighbor, by telling a story that the neighbor is whoever you're close to at the time. And so no matter where you go, you're going to have neighbors. And the answer to the question, are you the keeper of them? In a certain sense, yes. Another lesson that we can learn from Cain, excuse me. If we go back to 1 John chapter 3, wherefore slew he him? Because his own works were evil and his brother's righteous. The implication there is that there was jealousy and envy in the heart of Cain. because someone was succeeding at something and he wasn't. Now, the odd thing about that is that he knew how to succeed at that. Sometimes jealousy will take root in our hearts because we watch another person succeed and we're not sure how to do that. We're not sure how to get to where that person is, and so it rankles a little bit. But in this case, the jealousy is even, and that's actually absurd, really. But this is even more absurd because he could have. God said, if you do well, won't you be accepted? It's that easy. Okay, so the point here, what we can learn is that jealousy will spur us to do things that we never thought we would do. I don't think at the beginning of this chapter, as Cain and Abel were growing up together, that Cain sat around planning the day that he was going to get rid of Abel. It happened only after he realized that Abel was being successful, and he wasn't. And so he allowed that jealousy and anger and all of that to come into his heart and just take him down a path that what God said is so true. Sin lies at the door. And so the lesson for us, to make it really practical, if you find yourself sitting here tonight and you feel envious or jealous toward a person for whatever reason, I don't care what, how absurd it is or how major it seems, be very careful. You probably have enough self-control not to ever kill that person physically. But you're probably going to do some things to that person that you never thought you would do. And when I say you, I mean we. Because we're all cut of the same cloth. Don't ever forget what jealousy will do. Another place in Scripture it says that it is as cruel as the grave. It is very, very heavy taskmaster. Another lesson is that we must learn to accept correction. See, this tragic part of this story is that Cain had every opportunity to change. And that's what makes the end so tragic, because it ends up in a place where he's walking away from God and he's living in a land east of Eden, whatever that means. But it was somewhere away from where he should have been and could have been. One of the greatest gifts we can give our children is to learn to accept correction cheerfully. Because it will go through that, it will go through their lives, hopefully. They will continue to keep that grace and will exercise it, because there's ample opportunity to exercise that grace. And if we never learn how to take correction, what hope is there? It's not so much that we make mistakes. That's kind of a given. And so if we end up at a place where Cain is, where people are reasoning with us and saying, look, be rational about this. If you do well, you'll be accepted. If you won't do well, then sin lies at the door. And we just continue to walk our own way and take our own way. We will eventually be in a place where we can no longer claim to be in the presence of the Lord. Is that too straightforward? It's just the way it is. And you say, well, it's just the preachers of my church. Well, it's just the school teacher. Well, it's just my parents. It's just, I don't care. God put those authorities in your life for a reason. And if you can't take correction off of those authorities, you will not take correction off of God himself. I really firmly believe that. It's a terrible place to be. The last thing that I want to point out, maybe there's two more things, actually. Another lesson that we can learn is we can control our choices, but we cannot control the outcome of those choices. This is a concept that has been driven home to me because of a man who was involved in some very grave sin, and he was actually put in prison for it. And he was a friend of mine. I knew him well. I still know him. We visit him in prison. And watching him struggle with the whole concept of accepting the fact that even though God may forgive a sin, you still have to deal with the consequences of that sin, is it's kind of hard to put together. And yet, the thing that I learned in that, and I want to share with you, and I know you know this, but just want to verbalize it for you, is forgiveness does not undo the law of sowing and reaping. It never does. And certain sins have grave reaping. Obviously grave reaping. So in this case, we had a sin that was so grave that even the law of the land took issue with it, and the man's in prison. Okay? Now, there's sins that you can commit very readily that will have very grave effects that won't land you in prison. Case in point, if you would decide to commit adultery, you're not going to be put in prison for that. Because of the morals of our society. But there will be effects from that sin that no matter how badly you seek forgiveness from God, and no matter how confident you are that you are forgiven for that sin, you will reap those things. You will reap broken trust. You will reap all kinds of things. And there will be a long, long, hard road back. And so, learn to accept correction, because you will never be able to undo the consequences. And part of those consequences makes up my last point, and that is that our actions will very likely be used to justify other people in their actions. That's what I think Lamech was doing. He was like, killing's not that bad of a deal. Cain did it, he got away with it. And if Cain's going to be avenged sevenfold, then I'm going to be avenged 70 and 7. And don't we hear that? Don't we hear that from people who watch Christians or people who are supposed to be godly, and they see them fail and they see them turn against God, and they say, well, if that's the way people are going to be, I'm going to... Now, it's really flimsy logic, but people use it. And the fact is, maybe, just perhaps, we will be held in some kind of account for that. Just perhaps. If I have influenced somebody to do something that was sinful and they use my actions, just perhaps I will. So to me, Cain's story is a very human story. It's a story that we can relate to. It's why it's in the Bible. We learned some things about God tonight. We learned that he has standards. We learned that he has a law of righteousness and of sowing and reaping, and we must abide by it. And we learned that people can abide by it. Abel was fine. Cain was not fine. Let's not be like Cain. Let's follow what we know to be right. And when we have correction, make the correction before it is too late. Well, I think we'll just conclude with that, and I will turn the time back over to the ministry. God bless you.